Welcome back to the quote-unquote podcast, to what we are very affectionately calling the end of Dead Men Roll No Crits, the special episodes after the official podcast is done. That is walking us through the closing out of Skull and Shackle content here on the Patreon. This is your two-timing GM Patrick here, going for the twofer, and talking with me this week is the Galubrious Jabert, your Candoso, if you will.
That's me. That's the number one word that people used to describe me as, Galubrious.
A generous Jabert. That's a good one too.
Yeah, there you go. That
very generous with your time with me.
Well, yeah, I think it's a big time commitment for everybody. But
I don't know what you're talking about. I have tons of free time.
Yeah, it's an exciting juggling act between this and fatherhood. But yeah, it's fun. Let's say this is like what I do for fun.
Yeah,
in my life. So well, I'm happy to do it. So
I mean, speaking of which, Jabert, how long have we been playing tabletop role playing games together? Like
you invited me to your table in
Rise of the Rune Lords.
Yeah, 2014 maybe. Is that right?
No, I think it's got to be longer than 10 years.
Let's see. When was that?
Longer than a decade.
That was, yeah, it was like early. It was like in the early half of BM. So it's been
a long time.
Yeah, it's been a long
to
time.
To say the least.
It's been many, many a year.
I tried to think back, and I don't have great digital records for playing those games, but yeah, it's been a while. I'm very happy that we eventually got to play a whole bunch of Pathfinder together before we started in on the podcasting. But the first full Pathfinder campaign that we got to play together was Skull and Shackles, right?
Yeah.
From the beginning, and
yeah, with the exception of Book Six, we didn't run that one. Because I think it just made more sense to just like beat up Barnabas Harrigan, and then we were all like super stoked about Kingmaker, and so
yes, we moved on to another campaign. Yeah, so I guess we didn't. I've never GM'd you through a full Pathfinder campaign until this
last
year.
One we did, yeah.
We played Agents of Edgewatch and this one, and completed both this year.
Yeah,
so weird, but yeah, this is the second time you've played through most of Skull and Shackles. And I told you it's one of the things I never thought I was going to do in tabletop role-playing games, is play the same or GM the same campaign
to run it
AP twice. Adventure Path twice, because I was like, you know, what is in it for me, you know? Yeah. But honestly, I've said this before, the challenge of putting it into second edition and the joy of playing second edition in general is enough. Like I played in the Kingmaker campaign that you mentioned came after that. I could GM that one. No problem. I could honestly go back in a second edition Rise of the Rune Lords campaign and do that again. Like they're so good. They're honestly, I guess I was a little worried about being bored, but when you have mostly new players and new, I mean, it's been like 10 years since we played that first campaign, right? It's been so long.
I mean, one of the things that was sort of so striking to me was just like, you know, the different energies that the two different groups brought to it, you know? Mm-hmm.
I was telling Tyler that our first group was a little more One Piece, a little more wackadoo. We had our good friend Pat, who played a murderous goblin swashbuckler named Ceviche.
the chef named Ceviche
is very good. Is one of my favorite characters.
Yeah, there was a lot of things got very fun and weird. That was also when we instituted the house rule that like if somebody made a joke, you'd roll a d6, and if a 6 came up, then it just became canon. It became true.
A very, very fun little quirk, and we probably should have rolled a d20.
Yeah,
I don't know why a 6 sided dice was the decider. That
would get away from us. But it was like, you know, it'd be things like we would joke about. I think I had a situation where I you know, leapt into a pit that was like, you know, full of enemies, and I called out to our bard to featherfall me, and we were like, wouldn't it be funny if she just didn't hear and I just splatted onto the ground, roll it 6.
And it was funny.
It was hysterical. It was the best.
My favorite institution of the joke to reality rule was when you guys were slated to fight a very large wind elemental, an air elemental, and someone was like, wind, like as in break wind, like it's a fart. And I was like, all right, roll the d6. And it came up and we're like, all right, I'm making new rules about how it has like a noxious aura, because it's now
a fart monster,
a toot demon. Fart demon. Yeah, so a much more kind of silly campaign. We play then. It was a lot of fun. You were the captain of that campaign.
Yeah, I think purely based on aesthetics, I was the one who looked the most like a pirate.
Yeah, Rays in that campaign. Yeah, that was a different time. Doing it for the podcast felt a little bit different, but we started this podcast right at the beginning of the pandemic, where you and me and all the other folks on the podcast had a ton of time. That was before your child was born. Right. And we're just looking for stuff to do and stuff for the Patreon.
Well, I mean, and also it's just like, I think that was when we were still wrapping up. You and I were still wrapping up our Pathfinder first edition game. And I was really hungry to play some PF2E. And so, so like, I was like, you know, because we had Starfinder going, and we had our first edition game that was still going on.
Yeah, we didn't have anything second edition. And you were like,
do you want to play some second edition? And I said, I'll do anything.
You want me to be a druid? I'll be a druid.
I'll be your druid.
For you.
I'll be your Doug.
Right. So I counted it with Tyler. I don't even know if I can count how many campaigns that we have played together over the years. You've GM'd me. Mm-hmm. In Return of the Rune Lords. We've played together. I've GM'd you obviously many a time, mm-hmm. because my IRL game, like I said, you've been in mostly since the beginning, since the first Pathfinder campaign we ran, which was Rise of the Rune Lords.
Mm-hmm. Because you guys were doing 3.5 before that, right?
Yeah, yes. The first TTRPG we played was just Dungeons & Dragons 3.5 and a little homebrew that I created, which wasn't great. It's, you know, I would not recommend any first time GM start with world building an entire world by yourself and writing everything from scratch. But, you know, c'est la vie, you live and learn.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. It's, you know, in particular when you're starting out, it's like it's really tempting, I feel like, to do that. You know, I have, like, you know, notebooks half full of, you know, settings, and I was like, what if it was this?
Well, you read a book, like, and you're like,
into it, and you're like, I can do that.
Yeah, you read a fantasy book and you're like, how hard could this be? Let me try my hand.
Exactly.
And you get like one great adventure it out, and you're like, I could do this all the time. And then fast forward like 3 months and you're like, I've run out of content.
Right. Turns out,
yes. And that's
a year to write it. I thought it would take a year to play it.
That's when I fell in love with the Pathfinder adventure paths and discovered it's like, oh, you can just take this as a base and make your own fun out of it. And you can change up whatever you want. If you don't like this fight, you can put in a dragon, you know?
Yeah. I really love the way that the world of Pathfinder has so many different settings and so many, and like they have these interesting histories, and there are these like long like meta stories that you can sort of like be a part of. I mean, I know that's true for other settings as well, but I really enjoy this.
They just keep coming out with like AP after AP of things that didn't exist before. So, you know, we're gearing up to play a full Jianji AP. Four-part AP, and the one that's coming out, I think, later this year is like a fully Orkin land kind of, I think it's a three-part AP, but it's all about like Ork clans and from like their point of view. We just got...
Is that Belkson? Is that what that area is?
I think that's the next adventure path that they have lined up. And last year before, we got like a full Dwarven campaign, a three-part Dwarven campaign of like their culture. So they're going through and just checking off all the boxes, because I feel like Pathfinder First Edition APs was all like, let's set a story in this part of the world and now this part of the world. And now they're going even further with kind of the theming of the adventure paths. And yeah, I love
it. Like who are these peoples of the world, rather than like,
yeah,
what if it was revolutionary France? <You know?
laughs> What if Baba Yaga took you to World War One or whatever? Oh my God.
So good. So good. I want to run that campaign so bad.
Yeah. There are a few first edition ones I could foresee doing this treatment with and converting to second edition, just because they're such cool stories, but not anytime soon. We're done with Skull and Shackles, and it's time to look at pre-made Paizo content. But I mean, spoiler, we're not starting any new podcasts anytime soon for the Patreon. We have like a ton of other stuff we want to play for years. But
if they release another pirate adventure, though,
I was about to say if they release another pirate one, Tyler might have to GM that bad boy. I feel like he could be better at a pirate campaign than I was. So we'll see. Let's get to this episode's main thrust, which is a little interview with Jabert as a player and asking the questions I'm asking all the players about the campaign and your characters. First question, pretty simple. You played two PCs in Candoso and Bartleby. Did you like to play one more than the other? Did you like one characterization more than the other? You made two spellcasters, and I don't know why you did that to
because yourself. Nobody else wanted to play a caster.
you forced them. You'd be like, Tyler, you make a bard jerk. You
make a bard now. Yeah, well, let's see. I guess Oz was a witch when he was when he first wrote him. So
yeah.
And so he was also a caster, but I don't think that Seth really like fell in love with that class. And so I was happy to play two casters. It was definitely a bit of an adjustment for me, sort of moving from first edition to second and trying to, get used to the way that things work. I think one of the things that made it sort of like click a little bit for me was you at one point said that in second edition magic felt a lot more wild. And I was sort of like, yeah, it's like it's a lot more just like unpredictable, and it's much swingier, you know, and sometimes you'll be a level 10 character and you deal 300 damage or whatever. And then sometimes it'll be like, 20 points, whatever.
I really love and hate that critical fails and critical successes on saves can be such wild swings, because sometimes it's like, I think a boss is going to, you know, last go 10 rounds with the party, and then I just roll a natural one and I have no recourse to re-roll fails like that. So I'm like, I guess I'm taking 200 points of damage right now.
That kind of leads me to one of the things I was going to say about these characters. As far as which one I enjoyed playing more, I think I sort of enjoyed the druid a little bit. Like, I mean, I just that had lots of cool stuff to do. I mean, if I wanted to get up into melee, I could transform into a, you know, an animal or a dragon or something. That was a lot of fun.
A lot of transformations over the years.
Yeah, that was great. And then, you know, and the spells were, you know, sometimes extremely, they felt, made you feel super powerful. And then, but they almost always did something, you know. So that felt okay. I think I connected a little bit less with the cleric's spell list. But that said, I loved the character Bartleby very much.
Bartleby is very fun.
I really enjoyed doing roleplay with Bartleby and having, you know, like having tasks on the ship. I thought that was a lot of fun. And so I enjoyed playing both of them.
King Cassius wants Bartleby kept in Port Peril forever to do his paperwork. His
paperwork for him. Yeah, yeah. That's an A+ ending for Bartleby. So we had a lot of fun with that. And I one of the things that didn't feel amazing about in a game that felt generally very great. One of the things that was a little bit sort of, and this is true for everybody. Everybody rolls natural ones. Everybody's subject to the whims of the dice. Mm-hmm. But there were occasionally some times when, you know, my spells that I really, I might talk up a spell or really describe it in detail and really get in there with it and then just wouldn't do anything. Mm-hmm. And so it can feel a little anticlimactic at times, but I feel like it made up for it. The time that I turned into a dragon and, you know, flew up to the top of that wall and knocked a giant off the wall. That felt pretty good. So
stuff there. I was about to say that leads us into the second question.
Looking ahead at the second question.
What's your favorite character moment from the story adventure? But I want to say real quick, it's like, you know, we probably should house rule that like hero points can be used to perhaps make enemies reroll saves if they're not like critical saves or something along those lines, because the whole point of them and for the majority of the time, they are used for like melee characters to reroll attacks, you know, outside of rerolling everyone's saves. But yeah, when you have a spellcaster or two spellcasters whose majority of spells are kind of save or suck kind of things, it doesn't feel like you have as much recourse as those melee characters.
Yeah, a little bit less agency in the process.
Increase the DC.
Spend two point hero points or something. Like, I don't know.
All right. Next podcast, we'll work on it. What's your favorite character moment from either character or favorite section where they get to stand out and knocking the Cyclopses off the tower?
That felt pretty good. I like that a lot.
I felt so safe up there on top of the tower throwing rocks down. I was like, wait, Dragon Doso can fly up there in one round? Uh-oh.
And I mean,
Reggie.
The beautiful thing was I think I rolled a natural 20 on the shove attempt, and it was like, you know, I so infrequently would use those. I mean, as a caster, I mean, I would infrequently use those combat maneuvers, you know, and it felt so good to use a combat maneuver and have it just work exactly like I wanted it to in my head. And it was just like very good feeling. I think Bartleby, maybe I remember being we were being attacked by a bunch of undead that were sort of like swarming the ship, and Bartleby standing there and just like blasting these like waves of positive energy and just mowing down hordes of undead while Alaris was trying to go and like break the bell. And that was that was a lot of fun. That was pretty neat. Those were two real standout moments, I think.
Do your characters get a happy ending? Do they end up where kind of you thought they might when you created them?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. And I think that I don't know what I sort of imagined for Candoso. I think honestly, I kind of imagined Candoso just going off and like, you know, wandering away like the Hulk. And
Tyler said the same thing about Cassius. He's like, he might just leave. It's like, okay.
and going off to find adventures. But I mean, but honestly, it's, I don't know, finding a little home on the outskirts of, you know, a balance between, you know, the responsibilities that Candoso has and the freedom that he requires. Oh, I thought that was very nice. And Bartleby ending up doing paperwork in a quiet office for the rest of, you know, in a city. That's what he wants. That was nice too.
Bartleby, of course, also had the opportunity to head back and find his family members and his adoptive church and make sure they were safe in Chaliax before returning. King Cassius made sure that he had that option. So,
well, that's thoughtful. But that's good, because it was, you know, Bartleby was ultimately just trying to get home the whole time. Although I think it became clear at the end that perhaps Chaliax wasn't the safest place for him.
They suck there.
Yeah. So if Bartleby was able to get in and make contact and make sure everyone was safe, then I think that would just be, that would be enough for all.
Wish, Question four is a little bit different from two. What's your favorite moments as a player in the campaign? So not like a character moment, but playing the game itself or recording the podcast or anything like that.
Oh man. Let's see.
We've had a lot of laughs over the years.
Yeah. That one's tricky. That one's tricky. Cause I don't know. I enjoyed a lot of it, but a lot of these recordings were quite late.
You don't remember any of them.
And I don't remember.
You have to go back and listen.
Exactly. I'll have to go back and listen to the podcast, see which time I laughed the hardest. And then,
gosh, yeah. And so many, back to you. So many moments. Remember laughing to the point of nearly blacking out.
Yeah.
Sometimes it was you. Sometimes it was Seth making me chuckle a good deal. Rebecca also graffitiing the Norgorb Rite cultist lady, like drawing penises on her. That was just in book six. That made me laugh a lot.
Yeah, a lot of the shenanigans that we get up to are visual in nature because we're trying to keep the recording going for the listeners, so we're not like, you know, interrupting things too badly. I suppose that makes me think about, I loved being able to name the NPCs as we went along and just,
oh man, we fell off on that as the campaign continued, but it was so much fun.
It was so funny.
Yeah, no, I think folks also have mentioned like they enjoyed some of the earlier books even more than the later ones, but
it was the earlier ones felt a bit more piratey, you know.
Yep,
a little more sure. Like swashbuckling, and so there was something great about that. But I also love a dungeon crawl.
I forget when we introduced Bartleby, but when we introduced him and with the creation of Candosa at the beginning of the podcast, did the idea you had in your head for those characters come to fruition? Like, did you envision what they might look like at level 20 or the end of the story?
I mean, I think so. I think generally, yes. In particular for Candosa, you know, that class just sort of has so many great options for sort of expressing sort of the storminess. I think the druids do a better job at some of the other aspects of druidishness, I guess.
Druidishness.
Druidicness, I guess. Like storm sort of felt like maybe the thematically sort of like weaker of the different sort of like subcategories. But that said, I mean, it still got me there, and there was still a lot to do with it. There are things like, you know, I could sort of like hand wave it by being like, I got a magic horse, and that's why I can fly on the wind, you know. Something about like, you know, other characters just like having wings and being able to fly, and I'm like, hang on, guys, I gotta set it up. And so that was, yeah, there were a few things sort of thematically with Candoso that kind of felt just a smidge clunky, but at the same time, it was like, there's a lot of lightning spells. And there were later some rules about making your own staves so that you could like really like create a stave that actually sort of captured the things that you kind of, you know, wanted to have on hand. Those are good. Yeah, I mean, I think those felt really good. As far as Bartleby went, I had less of a specific idea of where Bartleby was going. And so that one was more just like, you know, we just sort of just play with him and see what happens. And
he felt very much like a PC that was there and just kind of thrown into things. Like he was a great fish out of water kind of character.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So I didn't feel the need to like do a whole lot of character development with Bartleby exactly. Just like, you know, he's good. He's good for what he's good at. And it was fun. That was fun to do. So.
Yeah. Question number six. Easy one. What was your favorite book? Or you can even name just like a favorite chapter, part of a book. If
The Isle of Empty Eyes was a lot of fun. I liked that a lot.
I mean, it's one of my favorites. It went on a bit too long, and yeah. folks were getting the itch to get back out on the ocean. But
I love
the Cyclops.
But like, yeah, the dinosaurs and all sorts of like cool stuff there.
I think Tyler hated it because he got captured at one point. And
that was with the harpies, wasn't it?
Yeah, I was very excited about that book because we decided to, you know, divide up A team and B team and kind of have little side adventures and go in different directions. And
yeah, that was really neat. I enjoyed that a lot. I enjoyed like having sort of the two groups. And I think that might've been the first time that we really did that. We had the two groups sort of like working on the same project together. So they didn't feel like completely separate, you know, things.
I think so. Yeah. We divided them into like all the beefy boys and girls on one team. And then like all the spellcasters on and Cassius on another. I was like, oh, this can work, right? No, it's hard. It's very hard. But yeah, and then we did some full A team and B team stuff on the island as well. But yeah, it constituted like 40 episodes or something crazy like that. It was like a big chunk.
Yeah, but there was a lot of neat stuff there. And so,
do you have a least favorite part of the adventure? You know, not necessarily
phase spiders. I mean, the phase spiders. Boy.
Also howdy, yeah. in book four.
Yeah, right. Oh yeah. I mean, that was a book of highs and lows.
Note to self, bring back phase spiders.
That was.
Yeah. That was Bartleby having to deal with them too, I think. Right.
Yeah. Right. Bartleby had nothing to do. I was like, can I cast bless? Yeah. If I'd had Candoso there, I think I would have been able to finagle some stuff, but I want to say there was also like some odd sort of rules about like some challenges about like readying spells.
Yeah. You really can't. And I think rules as written, I haven't checked and see if they've changed anything like that in the remastered or not, but.
So when they'd pop in and I'd just be like, hi, away they'd go. And so that was a challenging couple of episodes, but we got through it. We got through it. And mm-hmm. Then we did some other cool stuff. I want to say that we also had a situation there where like we basically got like we tried to ambush some Cyclopses and absolutely got the ambush turned on us, and just that was a rough episode. That was a rough record. I think there were a lot of feelings hurt that episode.
Oh, good times. So yeah, book four, great and terrible.
Yeah, like the highest of highs and lowest of lows, baby.
Well, question eight is kind of on that same track. If we were to play you and I this entire campaign a third or replay this one a second time, go back in time kind of question, would you change these characters up? Do you think you would want to play a different class or of pirate?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. these two were both a lot of fun to play and I enjoyed it a lot, but I mean it's, you know, I as my mom said, I think I sucked all the red off that particular piece of candy. And so,
would you want to do other spellcasters still or martial classes?
I enjoy casters a lot, so I do kind of want to try some other things. I'd love to get my hands on a Magus, I guess.
A lot of fun. That cool thematic, you know, pirate.
Yeah, that would be a lot of fun. But swashbuckler sort of, you know, classic, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, rogues are so good, but I don't know. My impulse is almost to like not go there because I want to, you know, try a little bit of a road less traveled, you know. We have
a whole bunch of new classes coming out too that seem like they would fit well, like the new kind of commanders, and I forget what they're calling them, but they're also making a some kind of new magic classes as well. There are just so many more classes even now than when we started playing Pathfinder 2e 4 years ago. You know, they've added in like 8 new classes since then, right?
Yeah, Gunslinger would be a lot of fun to play in something like this. Yeah, I really like building characters, and so if you asked me if I'd want to play the same character again in any campaign, the answer would basically be no, because because like
no, thank you.
There's just not enough time in life to play all the different all the different combinations you want to. So
if we keep making podcasts, there is, but
right. yeah. As it happens, you can cut through a lot if you do like, if you play like four games at the same time.
You've described me, my life in an incomplete, but I'm on the GM side.
Right.
It feels like I get to play all of them as my players make up these characters, but
yeah, we got to get you on the player side sometime soon. We got to get you.
Make a GM Tyler. Mm-hmm. Once his baby Besmara turns 18, he's back. He's on the hook. Yeah. Only 15 more years.
We got it. We can hold it. We can hang in there. I mean, it's wild, but it's, yeah, I mean, not much longer than the time that you and I have been playing RPGs already.
Yeah, just that the entire time we've been playing games together.
Just do that one more time.
And, all right, fine. I'll GM for the next 15 years. And then it's on you. Do you have any advice for listeners that want to make similar characters, similar mages, magic users, similar pirates for their own games, or if they were about to start Skull and Shackles?
Yeah, let's see. Yeah, it is. My advice would be, don't be afraid to use those. Don't be afraid to use those cantrips. Those cantrips are there for your for using. You know, they're put a couple damage ones in there, and then put some utilities in there, and rely on them. The other thing I think that I see this a lot. I used to see this a lot on the subreddit. I guess I don't see it so much anymore. But you know, there's a lot of like, you know, people feeling like, I feel like I'm just not doing as much, you know, I'm not feeling like I'm doing as much damage. And maybe I'm just projecting because that's the way I felt. But like, but like, you know, melee characters, they just do more damage. That's what they do. And so like, if you, like when you have opportunities to focus on a utility, those like, that can be really, really, you know, fine.
Casting like, haste on the party. That's pretty powerful.
That's a powerful thing, and it's, you know, learning to find the joy and like the utility moments is a big part of like loving casters, I think. And so, but that is hard in the early levels when you don't have a lot of space for utility. So, mm-hmm. Sometimes you just want to feel like you're helping.
I'm helping.
But like I had a bunch of times back in the old Kingmaker days when I was playing a wizard where it would just be like, all right, Jbert, what do you do for your turn? And I'd be like, all right, I start digging a hole. And I would just dig a hole for three rounds because I'm like out of spells.
Yeah, not quite something that happens in second edition.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You can always got do something.
Yeah, always got something. Which is nice. Final question before we wrap up the episode is just asking your final thoughts on these characters you made, yourself as a player over the last 4 years, the campaign itself, Skull and Shackles. Is this your favorite Paizo AP you've ever played or GM'd?
It's a really good one. It's a really good campaign.
I'd say it's very strong.
Yeah, I don't know if it's exactly my favorite, but I mean, just because it's such a different experience than the other ones, but it was a lot of fun. I would highly recommend this to people out there who have been reading this and who enjoyed this podcast. If you've gotten to the end here, I presume that means you enjoyed it. So, but yeah, I would recommend it to you. The conversion to second edition does seem like a meaningful amount of work, but it seems like there's enough tools and enough sort of like, you know, things that are one-to-one between the two systems that it's very doable. I've been working on a conversion for Winds of Winter. Or a Reign of Winter, like what we were talking about earlier. Yeah,
yeah.
It's just like, I'm so obsessed with that one. It's so
bonkers. It's
so silly. And
it's one that they're never going to convert themselves.
No, never.
It's being left in the dirt.
Yeah. I mean, one of the books is literally, the title of book five is literally, Let's Kill Rasputin.
Oh, so good.
Yeah. So yeah, this is a great campaign. These characters are a lot of fun to play with, and they were just charming, and my teammates were all fun, and the crew's funny, and I've just really enjoyed spending the last 3-4 years with you guys.
Really? Yeah, 4 years.
4 years playing these characters and exploring thank you, the shackles.
Pandemic for allowing this to happen.
I love the shackles too. It's like it's such a cool little, like, you know, you get these little like islands and you get to go explore. This is the dragon one, and this is the one with the, you know, the dinosaurs, and this is the one with the pirate city, you know.
Later Paizo campaigns are obsessed with maybe taking you to different places, and then both Starfinder and Pathfinder book 4 or 5, you go to like a different plane of existence or another planet or something crazy like that. And I'm not super into that.
I really like the ones where you just get like more and more into the place, and you just like, I know that that's now, so I get that that's sort of a challenge on the writing side, because sort of the way that they sort of do that writing is they're sort of like handing off these, you know, projects to individual writers who like otherwise might be like stepping on each other's toes if they're like going back to places you've already visited. You know, they don't like the writer of the fifth book doesn't necessarily know what the writer of the second book wrote yet, and so they're not being rewritten necessarily completely sequentially, but
as an AP writer myself, there's a good amount of discussion between the authors.
Some is going back and forth
at the very least. I imagine people don't want to
step on developer. Each other's toes, and like
you
don't want to like rely on an NPC being there when the characters might have been like, so we're just gonna kill this guy, right?
Yeah, that is something that can happen.
Always a risk.
talking about,
but when they're able to NPCs. Do that. When they're able to do that, and I think this campaign, you know, I imagine some of that was the books, and a large amount of that was your stewardship. But when you're able to sort of make the place feel really lived in, and you know, the people who you're interacting with, you know, matter, and you know, it feels good, and I like that a lot. And I say that, but when I do make you play Reign of Winter, I am going to send you to the planet Earth to go fight in World War One.
So. Yay!
Book 5.
So. Can't wait. All right. Rasputin rolls no crits. Podcast start date.
2025, baby!
No. 15 years from now. So
yeah, 15 years from now.
2039. Yeah. Oh, boy. Old man GM Jabert. Right, that's going to do it for this episode, this little one-on-one chit-chat. We're going to continue our march to the end of Dead Men Roll No Crit for basically the next month or so, and eventually we will have some all cast episodes put together where we'll talk about basically everything we talked about here, but together and goof and gaff together. But yeah, that's still to come. And yeah, there's still a ton more Patreon content to come in general. They came out with a Starfinder second edition. We're going to be playing that eventually.
There's going to be some more Starfinder for sure.
Sorry to all of our Patreon pirates who are only in it for the pirate the content. Pirate stuff. But hey, you've had 4 years of it.
They got space pirates. They got
that's a good point.
We could do some swashbuckling.
Good point. All right. So thank you, Jabert, for now playing through this mostly twice with me and recording here with me.
This is a lot of fun. I really appreciate you running these campaigns, and it's been a blast. And
I appreciate, I think we talk about it pretty often, but it's like we don't do the podcast for fans first. Fans enjoying it is just kind of like a byproduct of us enjoying it.
If we're not having fun, they're not going to have fun. So
I said, like, the day like we stop having fun playing the games or hanging out with each other is like podcast is just over. it's done. This is not our job. It's what we enjoy doing for fun, and hopefully that comes through in these recordings. But and hopefully that continues to 2039. All right. So that's going to do it for this episode. I think we got more one-on-ones after this. I think you're coming fairly early, and then more episodes doing a little post-mortem of the show. But that'll do it for right now. Thank you for being here, Jabert. And listeners, thanks for listening. We'll catch you on some more End of Dead Men Roll No Crits.
Yarr.